The next case is 09719, Disciplinary Counsel versus David Rohrer. Mr. Berger.
May it please the court, Robert Berger for Relator, Office of Disciplinary Counsel. Chief Justice, I'd request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The respondent, David Rohrer, intentionally violated a court gag order in the midst of a discovery disagreement with a rival assistant prosecutor. Next respondent lied to the presiding judge about his culpability for violating the gag order in order to avoid the consequences of his actions. When respondent's secretary reported respondent's misconduct to the rival prosecutor, respondent terminated the secretary and then sent two false and misleading letters to the Unemployment Compensation Bureau contesting her application. Finally, after the rival assistant prosecutor reported respondent's misconduct to Relator, respondent's initial letter to Relator was misleading in an effort to conceal his misconduct. The facts in this case are more than a single error in judgment and instead present a troubling pattern of dishonesty. It is for these reasons Relator objects to the board report, requests this court find the aggravating factors of a pattern of misconduct, multiple offenses, a false statement during the disciplinary process, and a selfish and dishonest motive, and further request this court order the respondent be suspended for 6 months. Today, Relator is advocating that this court find respondent engaged in a pattern of misconduct and multiple offenses. Because the facts that support both of these aggravating factors are similar, I'll present them together. Between October of 2007 and January of 2008, the respondent intentionally violated a court gag order, made three false and misleading statements to Judge Michael McClurg, sent two false and misleading letters to the Unemployment Bureau, and gave an initial response to the grievance investigation by Relator that was misleading. The board report declined to find that respondent engaged in a pattern of misconduct or multiple offenses, but there are several errors in the board's reasoning. First, the board attempts to separate respondent's misconduct in the underlying court case from his false and misleading letters to the Unemployment Bureau by stating that the letters to the Unemployment Bureau occurred after the underlying court case was completed. This is not correct. The two letters to the Unemployment Bureau were from November and December of 2007, and the court case underlying all of this did not conclude until March of 2008. Respondent also made a false statement to Relator during the disciplinary process. In a January 2008 letter to Relator, respondent falsely claimed that he accepted full responsibility for violating the gag order both on and off the record. There are three reasons why respondent's letter to Relator are false. First, respondent himself acknowledged at his own deposition during the investigation of this matter that his statement in the letter to Relator was not truthful. Respondent acknowledged at his deposition, "I did not say to the judge what happened correctly," and when asked how he acknowledged off the record how he had accepted full responsibility for violating a gag order, he admitted he had not. Second, at the disciplinary hearing, respondent acknowledged his statement to Relator was not truthful. Respondent's testimony was read into the record regarding the letter, and respondent admitted that these were false statements that were just a continuation of the false statements he made before. Third, the transcript of the hearing before Judge McClurg is present in the record. It's stipulated Exhibit 5. And if you read the transcript from the first word to the last word, you will not see anywhere where the respondent accepts full responsibility for violating the gag order. Instead, what you'll see in the record is respondent making three false and misleading statements to Judge McClurg. The board report mistakenly relies on the November 29th, 2007 contempt entry and states respondent was merely restating what the court had stated in its contempt entry. However, the court's contempt entry was made in reliance on respondent's initial false statements to the court. In the present matter, respondent also has exhibited a dishonest and selfish motive. There are six ways the record supports finding this as an aggravating factor. First, by respondent's own admission, he made a purposeful and calculated decision to violate the gag order. He determined it was the best way for him to obtain discovery. He determined that the assistant prosecutor, who was his rival and who he strongly disliked, was not going to cooperate. And he determined that he could not trust the judge to properly handle the case. Second, the respondent and the rival assistant prosecutor had a history of conflict, which was noted by the judge in the contempt entry and at the contempt proceeding. In fact, respondent even personally attacked the assistant prosecutor in his motion to compel. Third, respondent covered up the gag order violation with a false and misleading statement to Judge McClurg simply to avoid the consequences of his actions. Next, he continued to perpetuate this deception with the two false and misleading statements to the unemployment office. And finally, as mentioned before, he continued the deception by the false and misleading statement to relator. Respondent has suggested during his testimony that his sole motivation for lying to Judge McClurg was to avoid being removed from the case. If that was true, respondent would have had no need to lie to the Unemployment Bureau and relator. There are two additional issues for consideration by this court. First, respondent's own testimony shows a lack of remorse for his conduct. He testified at the hearing that justice got served by his violating of the gag order, that the only reason why he was sitting at the disciplinary hearing was due to the fact that he had personally attacked the assistant prosecutor, and he described his three false and misleading statements to the judge as misspeaking, misconstruing, and fudging. This is especially a concern considering the fact that respondent has been a practicing attorney for nearly 20 years, including 6 years as an assistant prosecutor, and has tried, by his calculation, 8 murder trials and 50 to 60 jury trials. Finally, this court has previously addressed the appropriate sanction for an attorney who lies to a court. In Cleveland Bar Association versus Herzog, this court stated, "We will not allow attorneys who lie to courts to continue practicing law without interruption." It is based upon these facts and case law, relator would request the aggravating factors be found and respondent be suspended for 6 months.
Mr. Berger, there were a number of mitigating factors, were there not, that were found by the board in this case?
That's correct, Your Honor.
He had a cooperative attitude, no prior disciplinary record. And were there sanctions imposed by the juvenile court judge in this instance?
He was found
him?
In contempt and given a suspended jail sentence and a suspended fine.
And he did have character letters, letters of character from judges and lawyers.
That's correct, Your Honor, and character witnesses testified at the hearing as well. On the other hand, Your Honor,
How should we evaluate? I mean, I understand the Herzog precedent. Don't misunderstand me. But how should we evaluate the mitigation and this one incident as against the mitigation that's present in the case?
Actually, Your Honor, I think you can use Herzog as a roadmap to do that. Herzog, in mitigation, was found to have the highest personal and professional integrity, 30 years of practice with an unblemished record, and he was found to have suffered from depression and marital difficulties, and there were no aggravating factors present in Herzog. Nonetheless, Herzog received a 6-month suspension. The other two cases cited by a relator, the one from Massachusetts and the one from Hawaii, had similar stellar mitigation, no aggravating factors, and again, both received a 6-month suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Berger.
Mr. Berger, you're probably not the best person to ask this, answer this question, so I'll ask Ms. Kahn when she's here. I'm really, I guess, surprised at the panel concluding that respondent's conduct here was impulsive. And your brief, of course, you indicate why we should conclude it was not impulsive. Do you, can you help us understand why that was the conclusion of the panel, at least the panel chair writing for the panel? But I can't understand why this is impulsive conduct.
Your Honor, a relator would agree that respondent's own statements and actions preclude it from being found impulsive. However, the board report seems to indicate one of the things the board relied upon was the contempt entry issued by Judge McClurg, in which he stated he'd never had prior problems with the respondent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Ms. Kahn. You know at least one question you're going to get, Ms. Yeah. Kahn, right?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Rashida Kahn, and along with my co-counsel, Jeffrey Stern, we represent the respondent in this case, David Rohrer. No one disputes in this case that the underlying case that gave rise to the rule violations was a very rare, very emotionally charged case. The stakes were high. No one disputes the good results that respondent was able to obtain for his client, this young client that was charged with 5 counts of murder and a count of aggravated arson. That case, the criminal case, was dismissed. No one disputes respondent's commitment to his client, whom he represented for and continues to represent for well over a year, or his exemplary commitment to the indigent defendants in Dark County. The testimony regarding respondent's only motive for misrepresenting to the court the true circumstances of how the gag order was violated is uncontradicted, and in fact was supported by another witness who testified in the hearing, who was also a lawyer who had assisted Mr. Rohrer on the case. As the board observed, respondent was clearly intent on protecting his vulnerable client. The board report took note of these undisputed facts and concluded that while respondent's conduct cannot be condoned, actual time off from the practice of law was not necessary in order to protect the public from respondent. It's our position that the board report is a balanced and thorough summary of the facts as they were presented, and that the recommended sanction of a state suspension is supported by Ohio disciplinary case law.
Counsel, you're attributing much to the fact that this was successful representation. This, my understanding, arose out of a discovery dispute, correct?
The gag order violation did arise out of a discovery dispute. That's
okay.
Correct.
Was there no other way for an attorney to receive discovery than to violate this gag order? I mean, that's what I'm seem to be hearing from you, that, you know, at all costs, he had to represent the client, and this was a successful method in doing so.
That's not what I'm saying. I think that we've admitted the misconduct, one, and certainly, and as Judge McClurg noted, that this attorney acted in the heat of the moment. He was angry because Prosecutor Hoover had made multiple promises to provide discovery. He did not.
Isn't that one of the reasons why you have a judge on the case?
Absolutely. And that's why we stipulated that that was wrong, and we stipulated to the misconduct. But the more important point in this is that while this respondent had made misrepresentations to the court, it didn't impact the end result of the case. It didn't slow anything up. I think that's my point in saying that he still helped his client. His misrepresentation, his misconduct did not harm the client.
Counsel, I guess I'm less troubled by the violation of the gag order, which the judge, you know, has the ability to punish or discipline in that case, as to the misrepresentations or the apparent dishonesty to the court in blaming it on staff when apparently it wasn't. Then the communication to the Bureau of Employment Service, which contained false information, that, and then apparently the belief that none of these things were really false, or at least the assertion. This is what I get at, and that's the part that troubles me more than anything else, where what might happen in the heat of the battle. It's the after part here where there appears to be an ongoing cover-up or denial. Could you respond to that?
Yes, we admitted to the misconduct. We admitted to the misrepresentations that the respondent made to Judge McClurg. We never stipulated, nor did we admit, that respondent had made misrepresentations to the Bureau of Unemployment or to Relator. With respect to the Bureau of Unemployment, what Relator was relying on was two letters that respondent had written in response to allegations or claims made by his former secretary, Daphne Lauck. We didn't have Daphne Lauck testify. We didn't even have the portion of, or whatever letters that she was writing that would allow us to know what he was even responding to. We didn't have the record from the Bureau of Unemployment Compensation. And the board took a balanced approach and said, well, look, he fired this employee, and therefore, we're not going to put in the plus column that he immediately addressed or he immediately rectified the consequences of his misconduct. But then we're not going to put anything in the negative column because of all the factors, of all the evidence that came in, that there was an improper relationship, that there was she had hid this grievance, that we don't know, we don't have enough facts to conclude what happened, and therefore, nothing in the plus, nothing in the minus. We only have clear and convincing evidence of this misrepresentation. With respect to Relator's argument that Relator's claim that respondent lied to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, it's our position that claim doesn't even make any sense. From the very first letter that respondent wrote to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in response to the grievance, respondent said, he admitted to making the misrepresentations to Judge McClurg. He stated, I told someone from my office to deliver that motion to compel in violation of the gag order. And in fact, prior to the hearing, Relator stipulated that respondent had cooperated throughout the disciplinary proceedings. Well, that includes the investigation stage. But then at the close of the hearing, for the first time, Relator argues that respondent lied to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, and the only evidence that that Relator could rely on or point to in support of this claim was this portion of a sentence wherein respondent stated that he accepted responsibility for his conduct. The board got it right when it recognized that this portion of a statement was really taken from Judge McClurg's entry, wherein he twice stated that respondent had accepted responsibility for his conduct. He said the second time, he stated, and I'm quoting, Mr. Rohrer has never had any problems with this court. In the heat of the battle, he let his emotions get the best of him. He made a mistake he's taken full responsibility for.
If we look at what the appropriate sanction should be, and I'm understanding that it's the difference between a six-month state suspension and a six-month actual suspension, Mr. Berger argues rather persuasively that despite all of the mitigation which is favorable to your client, that is almost a hand-in-glove case with the Cleveland Bar versus Herzog case, in which that respondent had a stellar character reputation, but still was sanctioned with a six-month actual suspension.
That's right, but Herzog is a 10-year-old case. Herzog involved a lawyer who lied to the bankruptcy court in an effort to avoid a judgment that was obtained against him by a former client in a malpractice case. That lawyer lied to the bankruptcy court in an effort to avoid his obligation to pay that judgment. That's not what we have here. The misrepresentations made to Judge McClurg respondent didn't stand to gain anything financially or otherwise. More importantly,
if the judge believed him, he would gain the respondent's belief that he, the respondent, wasn't responsible for the gag order violation, wouldn't he?
That's correct. He would be.
Well, that's pretty important, isn't it? If a lawyer is going to appear before that judge, obviously wants to have credibility with the judge, wants the judge to trust him or her. That's a great benefit, isn't it, to lie to a judge, to say somebody else is responsible for this conduct. It doesn't have to be money.
That would move to avoid the contempt citation. Totally abrogated.
So
there is personal gain.
There is personal gain in that respect.
So it seems to me as though Herzog does seem to control or at least have some longstanding precedent as to how counsel should conduct themselves in these situations.
Well, I would add that Herzog came around the same time period, 2001, with disciplinary counsel versus Trumbo, Feuerbach, Green, these other cases where this court held that violations of DR 1102A4 or 8.4C will result in an actual suspension. That rule has since been tempered by disciplinary counsel versus Ake, by Taylor, or by Fumich, and other cases that come out every year where there's violations involving misrepresentations to a tribunal or to a client, but because of the mitigating evidence, the sanction was tempered. The mitigation in this case is significant. It's notable. Respondent has practiced law for 20 years, committing the last 16 years of his practice to representing children and adults charged with crimes in West Central Ohio. A substantial portion of his clients are indigent. Respondent is one of five lawyers, soon to be four lawyers, who make up the Indigent Legal Defense Fund of West Central Ohio. Dark County Municipal Court Judge Julia Monin appeared at the hearing and testified on behalf of respondent and testified regarding the important role that respondent plays in this legal defense fund. Similar information was provided in Dark County Common Pleas Judge John Hines' character letter, wherein he echoed Judge Monin's concern about him being removed from the practice for some period of time, and also noted that respondent was known in his community as the attorney for the indigent. And even though Judge McClurg is not a witness in this case, we know that he continues to appoint cases to Judge McClurg. All three of these judges in Dark County rely on respondent to be able to handle the high-end felony cases, the complex cases of Dark County. He is critical in assuring the justice system is effective in Dark County. In our brief, we cited in support of a stayed suspension, the same cases that the board report cited, which is disciplinary counsel versus Taylor, and others, all of which involved violations of DR 1102A4. All of which involved multiple offenses, and all of which, because of the mitigating factors, called for a stayed suspension.
Ms. Kahn, it appears that the board, in its decision, did not really look that much. I know Justice Kupp has kind of raised this issue. Did not look at the impact on the employee with respect to the firing and the statement again that she was the one who basically sent the motion to the newspaper. Was this because there was no stipulation with respect to that particular portion of the case, or am I missing something? It appears that they just kind of glossed over this particular issue in the decision.
If I understand your question, what had happened was Mr. Rohr made the misrepresentation to the court, essentially blaming a member of his office staff for delivering the motion. He comes back to his office and tells his staff, look, you're not in trouble, but this is what I told the court. Daphne Lauk was the one who did disclose to Prosecutor Hoover this misrepresentation. I don't believe Ms. Lauk was the one that had delivered the motion to compel.
But she's the one who was fired then by your client.
That's correct. But as the board noted, there wasn't enough information, that they didn't know enough information to understand exactly what went into her termination. There were a lot of factors that went into her termination.
And there was a letter then written to after that with respect to her, or maybe I misunderstood that.
She made a claim for unemployment, and then he had the two letters that relators were relying on in support of his position that there's aggravating factors were letters that were in response to claims that we don't know that we don't know exactly what they were, but claims that she made in those proceedings. But again, it's our position that the board report correctly concluded that there wasn't clear and convincing evidence of any of these aggravating factors, and therefore they can't say or they can't justify a more severe sanction. You know, another example of how the board report was balanced is by concluding, well, if we decide that he acted impulsively, he acted in the heat of the moment, then we can't conclude that he had a dishonest or selfish motive. But on the other hand, by acting impulsively, he violated Rule 8.4H, a lawyer shall not engage in conduct adversely reflecting on his fitness to practice. Again, respondent stipulated to most of the misconduct. He has no prior disciplinary record. He cooperated throughout these proceedings. He apologized to the panel. He personally apologized to Judge McClurg. And in fact, before Judge McClurg had issued his entry, he asked Judge McClurg to find him in contempt. And for these reasons, we ask that the court overrule the relator's objections and adopt the board's recommendation of a stayed suspension. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kahn. Mr. Berger, you saved 5 minutes of your time.
Mr. Berger, what is your position with respect to the employee named in paragraph 17 of the board's report? The employee that was later fired.
Daphne Lauk? Yes. It's our position that the sending of the two letters to the Unemployment Bureau that contained false and misleading statements are an aggravating factor and should be considered by this court. And if the court goes to the hearing transcript, pages 35 through 44, respondent's testimony is present on those pages, admitting that his letters to the Unemployment Bureau were less than truthful. So it's in the record that respondent has acknowledged that. With regard to the false statement to relator, respondent acknowledged that as well, and that can be found in the hearing transcript, pages 42 to 46, which quote respondent's deposition transcript, pages 66 to 67. With regard to violation of the gag order, it's important to point out to the court that respondent's discovery request was 9 days old at the time that he decided the only way he was going to get his discovery was by violating the gag order. With regard to Cleveland Bar Association versus Herzog, as respondent's counsel indicated, Herzog lied to avoid the consequences of his actions, to avoid having to satisfy a malpractice judgment. There's no difference between what Herzog did and what respondent did in this matter. Respondent made repeated bad decisions to violate a gag order, to lie to a judge, to lie to the Unemployment Bureau, and to mislead relator. This is well beyond a heat of the battle error. It's for this reason relator is requesting this court find the aggravating factors listed in our brief and to order an actual 6-month suspension for the respondent.
Ms. Kahn urges that we should look at Fumick and Taylor and some of our later cases, which I think her term was it sort of tempered the actual suspension language of Herzog. How do you react to that position?
Your Honor, this court has in the past found that people who were dishonest didn't necessarily always get a required actual suspension. However, there's no case law out there and none cited by respondent's counsel where an attorney lied to a judge and did not receive actual time off. Additionally, we would suggest the pattern of misconduct in this matter extends beyond what was present in those cases.
Thank you.
Counsel, how much weight should we give to the fact that this is a relatively small legal community with a need, and that need is for indigent representation? And apparently, Mr. Rohr is one of very few attorneys that is called upon by the court to take these appointments. I get from the argument of respondent's counsel that the justice system in Dark County would be at a disadvantage if he was unavailable.
Your Honor, certainly this court has the ability to consider that as a mitigating factor and has in prior cases. However, we would suggest the pattern of conduct present in this case goes beyond and outweighs any mitigation that would offer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess before admission.
All rise.